he did a good thing. A really, really good thing. Tsar needed to get rid of those witches. He knew that it was unlikely that the King Witch would have been defeated forever. His hand was still burning bright green. He needed all of the ingredients in the spell to get rid of witches, and they had just gone to considerable lengths to get hold of this one. But for the first time in Tsar's life, he cared about somebody else more than he did about himself. So Tsar undid the stopper on the collecting bottle he was carrying. In a great, glorious roar, the giant's last breath blasted out of the collecting bottle into which it had been shrunk only an hour or so earlier. "Forgive them!" roared the giant's last breath. "Forgive them!" at a decibel so loud that Sycorax and Inkanzo and Tsar and Bodkin had to put their hands over their ears. "Forgive them!" 18. Forgive them. The released giant's breath was a roar so loud, and it made a wind so strong, that the bright pieces of blue dust that the druid was trying to collect whirled up into the air in a flurry of excitement and out of the druid's reach. The druid gave a howl of frustration as up and into the wind they went, round and round, impossible to catch, and the druid, arms flailing, dropped the gourd, which rolled onto the floor, all the dust spilling out of it in great, glorious swoops. And the druid himself lost his balance in the tremendous roar of the blast and fell out and over the edge of the battlement that had been broken by the ball of iron that encased the King Witch only moments before with a furious shriek. Down the druid fell, becoming smaller and smaller, and when he'd nearly reached the ocean, his pinprick of a body transformed into a gerfalcon, before spreading wide his wings and flying out, out across the waves in the distant direction of the islands known as the Giant's Footsteps. Just in time, for all around them the freed blue dust was singing a beautiful sweet song of life returning, as all the whirling innumerable little pieces of wish came joyfully back to life again, and they rushed around those tiny fragments in a confusing blur of reshuffling magic, whizzing back together in the memory of where they were, the impossibly complicated reality of a human body forming the perfect sculpture of what once was wish, until... oh! Bodkin would never tire of the heart-stopping moment when up above the small brown heart of wish reformed in the air. And then down it plunged through the chest, and wish sat up and took in that breath that was life itself in sweet, thirsty gulps. Caliburn had found wish's eye patch in the rubble, and he hurriedly handed it to her before the earth started trembling again. "Wish!" cried Queen Sycorax, extremely shaken, for it is not every day that you see your daughter blown into pieces, her heart flying through the air, and her entire body reconstituting herself in front of your very eyes. "Are you all right? Is everything in the correct place?" She held her daughter's hand and patted her down to check that she was real and alive and breathing, and that all of her was there. "I'm sorry, Mother," said Wish, gasping for breath. "I know it's a bit unusual, but it seems that I have more than one life. I do hope you don't mind." "I do not mind," said the Queen, in a definite tone of relief, "as long as you promise never to do all this flying about in little pieces in an untidy fashion, all this making your heart go jumping through the air, ever, ever again." "You were worried about me, weren't you?" said Wish, shyly.
"Perhaps I was," admitted Queen Sycorax, and then, "the way you defeated the King Witch was, I have to admit, clever."
"Queens have to think on their feet," said Queen Sycorax. The Queen did not smile at her daughter very often, but when she did, Wish's whole world lit up with sunshine. Wish smiled back delightedly. And as Queen Sycorax smiled at Wish, Inkanzo embraced his son.
"You said you'd make me proud of you, Tsar," said Inkanzo, "and I am proud of you. You resisted the power of the King Witch. I never thought you could. I said, be good, and you were. You really are growing up."
Tsar stuck out his chest in delight.
"It's all going to be fine," said Wish, joyously holding out her arms. "Thank you, Lonesome. Thank you, Squeeze Juice," she said, hugging the hairy fairy.
The werewolf was so surprised, he actually let her hug him too.
"Arr, arr, arr, arr,"
shouted Tsar. Join in, everyone! She's alive! Completely forgetting themselves in the excitement of the moment, the wizards and the warriors responded to Tsar's demand, and they also looked up to the sky above and echoed this wild cry. Arr! 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 Miracle on miracle. What a sight it was. Wizards and warriors howling at the sky alongside the most reviled, the most feared, the most despised beast in the wildwoods. And then, war, war, riarg! War, war, kriargle! Screamed the werewolf, abruptly tilting his head downward and fixing his savage gaze on the crowd with alarming intensity, foaming at the mouth and making tearing limb-from-limb motions with his arms while gnashing his teeth. Gura, gurgle! And the crowd's happy, supportive howling halted rather abruptly as they scrambled fearfully out of the way, pushing each other over and screaming a little in case the teeth-gnashing and limb-tearing was intended for them. This is the problem with werewolves, you see. They're hard to love, even when you're on their side, because they're so, well, scary. Now it really is all right, said Wish, with a sigh of contentment. It had been a terrible adventure, but it had all been worth it, thought Wish. She had been dreading the moment that her mother found out her secret, but now that she had, it was sort of a relief. Now could be the start of the wizards and the warriors finally working together to fight the witches. Her mother would fall back in love with Encanzo, they would stop this silly war between them, it was all going to be fine. But now that she was over her initial relief, Queen Sycorax was no longer smiling. She was standing, her immaculate hair covered in bits of brick dust and dripping wet. Her once white dress dragged behind her in the dirt, streaked with mud and mess, torn by witches' talons and dripping in green witch blood. She had made the unwelcome discovery, Sycorax may have suspected this already, but actual proof is always a bad moment, that she had an exploding daughter with a magical eye and a historically unfortunate magic mixed with iron component. It was all very irregular indeed. All right, snapped Queen Sycorax. All right? It most definitely is not all right. This is a disaster, and I am now going to take my daughter home, and I do not want to hear one word about this ever again. She adjusted her dishevelled hair and brushed down her white dress briskly. All Wish's wonderful fantasies about this being a new start collapsed in an instant. But this adventure has been a lesson to all of us that things are going to have to change round here, said Wish. People are going to have to change, people like us. The witches have returned to the wildwoods, and wizards and warriors have to join together to fight them off, just like we did this evening. Never! Cried Encanzo. Not on your life, spat Queen Sycorax. Wizards are incapable of change, as are warriors, said Encanzo, if anything, even crosser. No, no, don't say that, said Caliburn. Everyone is capable of change. What the children need is education, for the witches are still out there. And when they come back, then this girl, Wish, is going to be tested, and she may be all that stands between us and oblivion. Yes, and Caliburn's been giving us lessons while we were on the run, said Wish. He's a brilliant teacher, not just of magic, but all the warrior spelling and words and math stuff. And when Caliburn is teaching me, it seems to all make sense. I am not going to have my child taught by a talking bird, said Queen Sycorax. I know perfectly well how to educate my own child, thank you very much. You have both been saved from the King Witch, she went on, and now we must put things back to the way they were. But Mother, you and Encanzo were in love, said Wish, very distressed. Remember the wolves? Every second Thursday? It's the reason I am who I am. The true love's kiss of a wizard remained in your blood, and it made me magic, even though I am a warrior. Encanzo and Sycorax went very still. Wish quailed before the look of utter horror in her mother's cold blue eyes. Wolves? Thursdays? Said Queen Sycorax in arctic outrage. Wizards and warriors in love? Impossible! Inconceivable! Echoed Encanzo bitterly, in a voice hard as a diamond. A queen like Sycorax was always going to marry some idiot warrior with a thick neck and a big sword, so she could enjoy all these knick-knacks, these golden plates, this warrior jewellery trash around her neck. A queen like Sycorax would never be in love. I had duties! retorted Queen Sycorax. "Responsibilities! And you married one of your own kind, just as I did, Encanzo, for your disobedient son here must have had a mother once."
"But the giant Preponderous told us the whole story," said Wish, now miserably muddled. They were talking as if it had actually happened, while at the same time denying it. Grown-ups were so confusing. Was it true, or was it made up?
"The giant must have been listening to the fairies," said Queen Sycorax firmly. "Fairies are terrible liars. This is real life, Wish, not a fairy story. Therefore, I repeat, for the final time, Wish will return home with me to the safety of Warrior Castle, and as far as I am concerned, this just never happened."
At that moment, the witch smeller stepped forward. It was difficult for the witch smeller to be quite as scary as he had been only a couple of weeks before when he'd left Queen Sycorax's iron fort in the full screaming cry and splendour of the magic hunt. He had his sniffing nose, of course, but even that wasn't quite so alarming now that he and his magic hunters had no armour, weapons, shields, spears, sprite-catching equipment, anything. All of it had been used by Wish's magic to create the great, grim iron prison that now enclosed the Kingwitch. They were standing there in that cold, drafty castle, wearing mostly their underclothes. Some of them had even had to cover themselves with hastily arranged brambles, which make rather prickly trousers. A person always feels at a disadvantage when they are trying to address a queen while dressed in little more than their knickers, so the witch-smeller spoke with less than his usual authority.
"Your Majesty," he objected, "you can't possibly take this child Wish back to warrior territories. This child here is, as I suspected, an extremely dangerous fuel."
He lowered his tone in horror.
"And the fuel is magic. There's no two ways about it. And when I say magic, I mean really, really magic."
It was not wise to disagree with Queen Sycorax when she had decided something had just never happened. So now, she turned on the witch-smeller and fixed him with a stare that a frost giant would have been proud of, and her voice dropped to about 50 degrees or so below freezing. "I hope you are not suggesting, pest controller, that my daughter, who is the product of 19 lines of warrior good breeding and is a direct descendant of Brutal the Giant Killer himself on both sides of her family tree, is some kind of common changeling."
"Well, I don't know about that, but you have to admit something very odd has gone on," spluttered the witch-smeller, quailing under her stern gaze.
"Or perhaps," continued Queen Sycorax, in a voice so grim it could have shrivelled a snail at 50 paces, "you are putting forward the notion that I, Queen Sycorax, exchanged a true love's kiss with a rascal of a wizard, and that that has in some way turned my impeccably pedigreed warrior of a daughter treasonably and untidily magical."
"But she was exploding all over the place into an enormous cloud of dust, shooting spells out of her eye, making all that iron fly about like this," babbled the witch-smeller, waving his arms around energetically to recreate the moment. "We all saw her do it, right in front of us."
Queen Sycorax's eyes narrowed to splinters. "So you all saw her do it, did you?" She turned to the crowd, and her voice was as brisk and as meaningful as a freshly sharpened knife. "Step forward if you have seen my daughter explode like some kind of badly raised wizardly firework. Put up your hand if you witnessed my daughter making spells with iron like some sort of ghastly magical blacksmith." There was a dreadful silence. Nobody put up their hand. And then, such was the force of Queen Sycorax's personality, that everyone took a step backward. Wizards and warriors alike, muttering things like, "Oh no, we saw nothing, nothing at all. It's difficult to see in this kind of light." Queen Sycorax raised one splendid eyebrow and turned to the witch-smeller. "It appears," she said, in a tone like a cat bite, "that you were the only one who witnessed this spectacle, pest controller. You and your magic hunters are dismissed, and don't expect me to offer you any references to the Emperor." The witch-smeller trembled with indignation.
"This is an outrage," he said. I shall report this whole story to the warrior emperor myself, and he shall remove your crown and bring the might of the anti-magic commission down upon you and upon that fuel.
You're going to tell the emperor that you failed, and that the king witch was defeated by a couple of 13-year-olds, said the queen in a tone of gentle surprise. But you're supposed to be his crack magic hunting troops. The emperor doesn't like losers, pest controller. And what I would do if I were you is to take some of these witch feathers lying about around here back with you to the capital and make up some story about how it was you who destroyed the king witch. And then maybe he will forgive you for losing all that expensive magic hunting equipment.
You are the most appalling woman I have ever met in my entire life, said the witch smeller, bitterly.
Queen Sycorax gave a small smile. I think she took that as a compliment. The witch smeller drew himself up to his full height and adjusted his underclothes. He and his magic hunters gathered up as many witch feathers as they could find, and then they stalked out of the courtyard with as much dignity as they could manage, considering they were half-dressed and unarmed. I'm afraid that the watching wizards and warriors did not entirely hide their laughter, and the sprites certainly didn't.
Very good, in which case order can be restored, sniffed Queen Sycorax with satisfaction, for there was nothing that Queen Sycorax liked better than order being restored.
I will take Wish back to Iron Warrior territory behind the wall, so she will be safe if the witches return.
And as for Zar, continued Inkanzu sorrowfully, don't take this badly, Zar, but I do still have to take you back to Gorman Crag.
Why?
Asked Zar in shock. He had never heard anything more unfair in his life.
Let me explain, said Inkanzu. Gorman Crag is not supposed to be a prison so much as a rehabilitation centre.
They always say that, yelled Zar in outrage, but rehabilitation centre is just a fancy way of saying jail. You said you were proud of me. You said I was growing up. You said I did a great job at controlling the witch stain and being good, and now you're going to punish me for it?
Look, I am impressed, Zar, with how you've been trying to be good. I really am, said Inkanzu. But here in real life, you cannot wish away that witch stain, and it is only going to get worse. The Druid Commander was a bad lot. But I will go back to Gorman Crag with you and make sure a new and kinder regime is installed, for that is where you will be safest until we can get rid of the witch stain entirely.
That isn't what we need to do, howled Zar. We need to find the ingredients of this spell to get rid of witches that we found in my spelling book. Show him, Wish.
Bodkin took out the spelling book and gave it to Wish, and she showed Inkanzu and Sycorax the right page.
Who wrote this spell? Asked Inkanzu after a while.
I did, said Wish, with Caliburn's feather.
Inkanzu sighed and gave the book back to Wish.
This isn't a real spell. Wish just made it up, said Inkanzu gently.
What do you mean it isn't a real spell?
Said Zar, very crestfallen indeed, for he had been pinning all his hopes on that spell.
Look, said Inkanzu. It's in the Write Your Own Story section, right next to a whole load of stories about Zar being the biggest hero the world has ever known. No one single spell could defeat the witches on its own.
Inkanzu is right, and it is just as I said, said Queen Sycorax. This is the real-life Zar, not a fairy story. You have to be reasonable and do as you are told.
Wish stepped forward hurriedly. They were all going to be there forever if they had to wait for Zar to be reasonable and do as he was told. But at least she could finally say the words she had been intending to say all along, a couple of weeks back, on the royal stage in the Iron Warrior Fort.
You are wrong, Mother.
Wrong, said Wish, defiantly holding up her fist.
Sycorax started in shock. And then she gave Wish that look. A look of deepest and most furious disappointment. The look that generally meant that all the words that Wish had been intending to say went completely out of her head. But standing by her friend's sides, with Zar, Bodkin, the spoon and all her enchanted objects, and the werewolf, the snow cats, and with weeks of terrifying and challenging adventures behind her, Wish opened her mouth and carried on speaking, despite that look.
You are wrong, Mother, wrong, repeated Wish fiercely. And so is King Inkanzu. You have to believe that the world can change, that the spells can work, that you can write your own story, whatever the odds that are facing you.
for it is surprising how often the universe depends on one unlikely chance.
Queen Sycorax looked at her daughter. That look unfroze. She remembered once more that she could not underestimate her peculiar little daughter. Sycorax touched Wish on the shoulder.
I'm sorry, Wish, said Queen Sycorax. You'll understand when you're older.
Oh, for goodness sake, why do they keep saying that? Thought Wish crossly.
The adults clearly weren't going to see sense, whatever their children said. The grown-ups had some growing up to do themselves. So Wish turned with a sigh to Encanzo.
All right then, I don't agree with you, but if I can persuade Zar to go back with you to Gormenkrag without a fight, will you and my mother at least grant us one wish? Asked Wish.
If you can persuade Zar to go back with me without a fight, that would be a miracle, said Encanzo. I make you no promises about the wish, however.
Wish took Zar aside and whispered something in his ear. Zar looked thoughtful.
All right, he said grumpily, I'll go back.
A miracle, said Encanzo, in amazement. I must come to you, daughter of Sycorax, for Zar training tips.
What is your one wish? Asked Sycorax suspiciously.
I wish you would both grant us just one night of ceasefire, begged Wish. One evening banquet, here. Wizards and warriors sitting and eating together. One night to celebrate the one time that wizards and warriors fought together side by side and defeated the witches, and when a werewolf and a wizard saved a warrior princess's life. One night, stolen out of time.
Just this one night? Said Encanzo thoughtfully.
And then we go back to real life, said Wish.
It's a beautiful evening, she added persuasively. And look, one of the giants is starting to dance.
It was true. One of the larger giants was gently moving his long limbs in a slow, dignified country dance, humming to himself and the moon above.
And then in the morning, I promise, I will go back to Gormenkrag and even tell you how to turn my brother back from that creature into being Luter again, said Zar,
gesturing at the furious form of the creature that was Luter being held, rather gingerly at that moment, by one of the druids.
Queen Sycorax gave a start.
Have you no control over your repellently disobedient son? She said to Encanzo. He turned his brother into that.
Your own offspring is not exactly a perfect example of obedience herself, snapped Encanzo. Do warriors normally jaunt about the countryside in the company of enchanted spoons?
This was unanswerable, and the two monarchs bonded silently for a moment over the problems of parenting. And they were at least considering Wish's request.
I will not dance myself, said Sycorax thoughtfully. I never dance. But I would normally give my troops a little celebration after a battle like that one.
We in the wizarding world would feast into the small hours, said Encanzo.
Everyone was tired. Everyone was hungry.
If they went their different ways right now, they would have to climb down that mountain again, and nobody particularly wanted to do that after a long, exhausting fight against the witches.
It would be irregular. Most irregular. But it would mark an irregular event. And it was, by chance, midwinter's end eve, the day before spring finally turned into summer. Midwinter's end eve was also known as Fool's Day, and things that happened on that day did not really count.
As long as you absolutely understand, Wish, said Sycorax sternly, that it will be just one night out of time. It will change nothing. We go back to war with the wizards tomorrow morning. Both of you have to give your wizard and warrior words that you will come back with us tomorrow.
Wish blinked at her innocently.
Oh, yes, Mother. What you're saying makes total sense. It would just be one night out of time. We give our word, don't we, Zar?
Absolutely, said Zar.
Said Encanzo. Said Sycorax. Quite by chance, they were both thinking the exact same thing, which was that they would give in to their offspring's request, but they would not let them out of their sight for one single second.
19. Midwinter's End Eve, also known as Fool's Day, one night out of time. So Sycorax and Encanzo turned to their subjects and ordered one night out of time.
Warriors, cried Queen Sycorax,
For this one night, I decree a ceasefire between the warriors and the wizards to celebrate a historic defeat of an ancient enemy, the witches. Tomorrow, we return to our battles. Tomorrow, we carry on our war. But tonight, we feast.
One night out of time, cried King Inkanzo.
The warriors and wizards gave wondering murmurs, for this was almost unusual. But the fight had been won, and the word feast acted on them all like a magical elixir.
One night out of time, the wizards and the warriors cried back to their monarchs.
And so began one of the most extraordinary evenings in the history of the Wildwoods. A great bonfire was built in the centre of the courtyard, and the flames burnt red, yellow, and also eerie blues and purples as the druids and the sprites added magical fire to encourage the real flames to burn higher and hotter. Warriors danced with giants, whooping around the fire. The hairy fairies whizzed around in a state of high excitement as everyone made music, Queen Sycorax's warriors blasting out joyful horn noises, Inkanzo's fiddles hanging in the air, magically playing themselves, the giants humming happily, linking arms with each other, the sprites singing their high, bright songs of things too high for the human eye to see, sounds too low for the human ear to hear. The giants sang their giant songs, which rolled out across the landscape.
I need the space to run my fill. I need to jump from hill to hill. And if you take my woods from me, I'll wander out into the sea and try to find another world so I can live a giant life.
The warriors sang their own songs.
No fear, that's the warrior's marching song. No fear, we sing it as we march along. No fear, 'cause the warrior's hearts are strong. Is a warrior heart a-wailing? Is a warrior heart a-failing? Is a warrior heart a-railing? No fear!
And the songs of the warriors mingled with the melancholy song of the werewolf.
I'm running for the moon, up to the moon, where I can be good when all the world gives up on me, when everyone thinks bad about me. I still have the moon, it's me and the moon, mostly it's me and the moon.
Every now and then, the werewolf would break off to howl, arr, ow, arr. The sprites rushed around, wildly overexcited, playing tricks on everyone with naughty games like Hinky Punk cast a spell on one of the warrior's bowls of stew, making it rise up into the air and land on his head in a sticky, stewy mess. Tiffin Storm lobbed a softening spell onto some of the warrior's knives and forks, so they went all floppy in their hands and they couldn't lift their food up to their mouths. Bumble Boozle cast little stopping time spells so that he could nip in and steal everyone's food while time stopped for a blink of a second. And Caliburn flew around, very harassed, trying to stop all these things from happening. Zar and Wish and Bodkin watched them all dancing.
You see, said Wish, they can get on if they try.
It won't last, said Bodkin gloomily. Your mother said one night, and when your mother says something, she means it. Tomorrow they're going to be quarrelling and fighting all over again.
Grown-ups are so annoying. They always think they know best. Why won't they listen? Said Wish.
Bodkin sighed. Yes, but it probably is for the best. You will be safer back in warrior territories, Wish. And Zar, I know it's uncomfortable at Gorman Crag, but now the chief druid has gone, maybe they can find an antidote for the witch stain.
Both Zar and Wish looked at him as if he were crazy.
Oh, Bodkin, we're not going back to warrior territories or to Gormancrag, said Wish casually.
What? But you promised. You gave your warrior and your wizard words, said Bodkin.
A promise can be broken, said Zar piously, in pursuit of a higher good.
Anyway, they lied to us, and so that promise doesn't count.
What are you going to do? Squeaked Bodkin in alarm.
One of the many reasons Bodkin wanted to go home was that back in the warrior fort he had Wish all to himself. He and the spoon were her only friends. But out here in the Wildwoods with the wayward but undeniably charismatic Zar, Bodkin had to share her. Bodkin told himself it was for Wish's own good. that all he was concerned about in his official capacity as a bodyguard was Wish's health and safety, but he knew really in his heart of hearts that he was ever so slightly jealous, even though, and this made Bodkin very sad, out here in real life, an assistant bodyguard would never end up with a warrior princess.